Bharat, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you.
Bharat, this is the first time we're talking with each other. A bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a documentary filmmaker or a producer of documentary films. I reside in Coconut Creek, Florida, United States. I was born in Lebanon, and now, as I said, I'm based in Florida.
Bharat, when you had the idea of making a movie about orphans of the Armenian genocide?
I never decided one day, you know, I woke up one morning and said, okay, today I'm going to produce a documentary on orphans of the Armenian genocide. What happens is I stumbled into it. And actually in 2010, March of 2010, I was reading an article about orphans of the genocide. Actually, it was about a specific orphanage in Lebanon where Armenian and Kurdish children were being Turkified by Turkish or Ottoman authorities. And this article was written by Robert Fisk of The Independent, the British newspaper Independent. And I was amazed by the content, the information of this article. And I thought to myself, I said, I have to do something about this because this is an untold story and it needs to be told.
Bharat, can we say there were two types of orphans, the lucky ones that Near East Relief was looking after them, and the other ones, the ones that they were in Turkish orphanages?
Yes, you know, after 3.5 years of research, we discovered that there are two main types of orphans, Armenian genocide orphans. One we can categorize as the friendly orphans or friendly orphanages or orphans who've been in friendly orphanages and the hostile orphanages. And then we found that in each subcategory, there are four different types. You know, for example, in the friendly ones, you have the orphanages that were run by non-Armenian organizations such as Near East Relief, Australian individuals and organizations, British, Scandinavian, American, and Canadian. And of course, as we know, the main provider of these orphans or orphanages were the American Near East Relief Organization, which was an unbelievably Herculean task that, you know, these individuals, as early as 1915, the founders of this organization decided to extend a helping hand to the Armenian orphans, and they were very successful in doing so. And not only they saved these children, they educated them, they sheltered them, and they kept them Armenian. You know, they were, even though they're not Armenian, or they were not Armenian organizations, but they made sure that the children were raised as Armenians and stay Armenians. And after all, these were the orphans that basically founded the Armenian diaspora as we know today, these orphans. And the numbers of the ones who were saved were at least 130,000 orphans. And as I said, these children were the founders of the Armenian diaspora as we know it today.
Bharat, is there enough material in the Near East Relief archives about the Armenian orphans?
Well, the Near East Relief Foundation archives are kept at the Rockefeller Archive Center in New York. And I've been there myself and I've done a lot of research. There are a lot of information there, a lot of documentation, but the documents and the photos are in their raw form, meaning I wouldn't say they were unorganized, but there is still a lot of work to be done. But there are a lot of information. Another source that we used for our film was the Library of U.S. Congress. Then we got some information from the Bundesarchiv, the German National Archives, the Danish National Archives, and also we had a lot of luck by resorting into private archives, you know, personal archives that we dealt with, and also, of course, the Armenian Genocide Museum archives in Yerevan and some other organizational archives.
But Edward, some of the orphans allowed to settle in America?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because as I said earlier, New East Relief Foundation, their goal was, in all sincerity, to save these children and keep them Armenians. There was no mass transportation of orphans from Armenia or the Middle East to the United States. Even though some did eventually make it to the United States, they had families, but there were no organized efforts to bring these children to the West. On the other hand, though, there was one example that I can mention, which was the Georgetown Boys and Girls of Canada, where about 120 Armenian orphan boys and girls were transported from Corfu, Greece, to Ontario, Canada. Georgetown Boys and Girls were the only known group of orphans who were brought to the West, and they were settled in Canada, and they were integrated into the society. And some of these children eventually became very successful Canadian citizens. There is also another example of mass exodus of Armenian orphans was by the Pope Pius XI of the time. In 1918 or 1919, the Pope decided to save 400 Armenian orphan girls from Istanbul, actually. The girls were in Istanbul, and they brought Constantinople back then, and they brought the children all the way from there to Rome. And the Pope himself took upon him to take care of these children, educate them. And these children are very famous needle workers. They created these amazing needlework, and we'll be featuring this part of the orphans in our next film, Women of 1915.
Barit, what about other orphanages like the one in Gyumri?
Okay. See, earlier in our interview, we mentioned that there were two main types of orphanages, one of them being the hostile ones and one of them being the friendly ones. Of course, and as we mentioned, the friendly ones, the main task was spearheaded by New East Relief Foundation. And one of the main undertaking was the Gyumri or Alexandroupol Orphanage, which Alexandroupol was the second largest city, still is, in Armenia after the capital Yerevan, where 22,000 orphans were housed in one complex that consisted of 75 huge stone buildings. These children were housed there. They were educated. They were taught trades and crafts. And eventually, most of these children were integrated into the Armenian community there. And it was an amazing place because they even had their own hospital. That orphanage is the world's largest orphanage ever. And me, personally, I've never heard of an orphanage that's housed, you know, over 20,000 or 22,000 orphans. So Gyumri Orphanage is one of those friendly orphanages where Armenian children after the genocide were taken in and fed and educated, and that's what happened there.
Going on to the hostile orphanages, what's the story of Ayn Tura?
The perfect example of a hostile Armenian genocide orphanage was the Ayn Tura orphanage, which was in Lebanon, about 20 minutes away from the capital, Beirut, where this school, it was a college, it was a high school, a Lazarite Christian high school. And the Ottomans turned that high school into this orphanage where 1,000 Armenian orphans and 200 Kurdish orphans were being Turkified. By Turkified, we mean they were systematically turned into individuals that they were not, meaning their names were changed. They were stripped of their Armenian names, first and last names. For example, Hagop became Ahmad, and everything is documented by the Lazarite brothers. And their religion was changed. They were not allowed to do the crucifix. They were not allowed to say a word of Armenian, so they were forcibly taught the Turkish language, the Muslim religion, and they were prohibited from using Armenian names or words or anything that signified their original identity. And this was done, of course, by force. And out of those 1,200 children, or the 1,000 Armenian children, 300 of them died on premises because of malnourishment, mostly, and lack of nurturing. So that's what happened in Antura, a perfect example of a hostile orphanage.
Barit, what are the steps in making a documentary like the one you did on the Armenian orphans? You first study the subject or you look for funds?
Well, this, I guess, brings to another topic what the challenges are. Yes, the main challenge was the funding. Even though, you know, eventually we were able to find some good-hearted donors and supporters of this project, and that's how we were able to finish it. But the way we did this is research. See, this topic, the orphans aspect of the Armenian genocide, was an uncharted territory, meaning there were no ready-made studies or research done on the topic itself. Even though there were a few Armenian books about the orphans, in fact, there was one that was very well done, but it wasn't a complete, a thorough research that represented the whole picture, the big picture as far as the orphans of the genocide was concerned. So our research was mostly primary research. You know, it wasn't secondary research based on such and such professor's work or such and such researcher's work, even though there were some, but the majority was done by us. And now, after 4 or 5 years after the film was done, we hear, and I'm very happy to hear this, you know, we see people are writing books on specific orphanages of the Armenian genocide. They're translating memoirs of orphans, you know, which I can give you one example for it. Karnik Panyan was an Islamized Armenian orphan who eventually reconverted into Christianity, and then he wrote his memoirs, and he dedicated all his life to educating Armenian children. And his memoir was written in Armenian, of course, and after the Orphans of the Genocide film, his family decided to publish the book in English, and now it's in the market. So this is one example. Then I get phone calls from students who like to write their thesis or master's thesis on orphans, and they ask for information. And I'm very delighted to say that, you know, some even contact me from Germany. You know, it's an amazing turn of events that I'm very happy with. So in the beginning, it was very difficult for us to find information about the orphans of the Armenian genocide. Mm-hmm. But 2 years into it, we found ourselves in piles and piles of documentation and photos that now we had to decide what to include in the film and what not to include. And then we came up with an idea. We said, why don't we publish a companion book? And whatever story that, you know, doesn't make it to the film, we can incorporate it in the book. And that's how we did. So now we have a companion book. It's not an academic book, but it's, you know, mostly archival photos unseen. 80% of the photos that we use were never been seen before. And we gave light to these documents by publishing this book and producing this documentary. And we were lucky enough to find two living orphans of the genocide, a lady and a 105-year-old woman in Wydenville, Massachusetts, United States, about 45 minutes from Boston. And we found a gentleman, a 102-year-old gentleman in Lebanon, and we interviewed him also. He told us his story and she told us her story. But unfortunately, both of them passed away about a year and a half ago. But we're lucky enough to have their testimonies on film.
Barit, one of the best-known Armenian orphans was Sabihe Gökçen, and Hrant Dink mentioned about her on our program.
Yes, Sabihe Gökçen, yes.
Yeah. Have you studied her story?
In fact, we have about 5-minute segment on Sabihe Gökçen in our film, in Orphans After Genocide. And that's another amazing story that we did some research on, and like I said, we included in our film because it's a very powerful story. You know, a child, an Armenian child born from Armenian parents, was adopted by Atatürk, the founder of the current Turkish Republic. And this girl eventually became a pilot, and not an ordinary pilot, but she became a fighter pilot. And she was the only woman, the fighter pilot woman in the world back then, and she happened to be an Armenian orphan. And the interesting part of her story was that when in the mid-30s, when there was this Dersim issues in Turkey, in the area of Dersim, she was commissioned to fly a plane and bomb that region, where after the Armenian genocide, thousands and thousands of Armenians fled to, and they were disguised as Kurds. So most likely some of her bombs killed Armenian, you know, individuals during the bombing. And another interesting, you know, part of the story is that since she was this very famous, iconic woman of Turkey, she never admitted that she was an Armenian. She, until the day she died, she never admitted she was an Armenian, even though, you know, it's a common knowledge amongst Armenians. I grew up by reading articles about her when I was a child. So another twisted page of Ottoman history.
Barit, what other documentaries have you prepared on the theme of Armenians?
Well, before Orphans of the Genocide, I've done a few experimental Armenian ones. I did an experimental one on Hrant Dink and another one on Father Komigas. But as I said, they're experimental and they're not for public consumption. Even though before I embarked on Orphans of the Genocide, I've worked on a lot of American and Spanish documentaries that have broadcast on a public broadcasting corporation that we have here in the States. So it's a network. And I was lucky enough to win 4 Emmy Awards, you know, while I was working for PBS Network.
Barit, what's your next project?
My next project is actually my current project, which is called Women of 1915. It's about the plight of the Armenian women and all those non-Armenian women who came to the rescue of their Armenian sisters, regardless of cultural differences. It's amazing how young women of, you know, at the age of 19, 20, 21, they left their comfortable plush lives behind and flocked into the killing field of the Armenian genocide and saved thousands and thousands of Armenian women. Because as we know, the men were gone from the beginning. They were killed outright. You know, by helping and saving these women, they were also able to save some of the children. And I thought this is an amazing story because, you know, I found a lot of documentation on some giants of, you know, women, European women, American women, Canadian women, Australian women, who, you know, helped save thousands of lives. And some of them, you know, even died while they were serving in the killing fields of the Armenian genocide.
Barit, I presume it's not easy to, you know, research and documents and then work day after day on this type of topics, from the orphans to the women of the genocide, emotionally.
Yes, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, the thing is, like I said, I stumbled into Orphans After Genocide. I never planned to wake up one day and say, okay, today I'm doing a documentary on Orphans After Genocide. It never worked that way. It just happened. And, it, you know, I feel like it's my path. It's one of the paths of my journey of life that I need to do this. And then now another path opened up in front of, which is the women of 1915. So I have to conquer that one too. So they are difficult projects. very difficult test because, you know, another reason is they're not-for-profit projects. They're not money-making projects. So I will never find investors. What I'm looking for and luckily finding, you know, supporters, donors, and that's how we're moving on. And hopefully some people hear about this on your radio show and contact me and tell me, here is my dollars for you to complete this project, because my mother was one of them, or my grandmother was one of the women that you're discussing in your film. And that's how we've been raising our funds, you know, good-hearted people who believe in this project, and some are Armenian, some are non-Armenian, because it's a universal story. Yeah, it's true that the, you know, it's about Armenian women or Armenian orphans, but all women going through genocides went through the same thing. They were raped, they were abused, they were manipulated, they were killed, tortured, and yet they raised their children and created the next generation. So it is a universal story. It is a human story that should involve everybody, even Turks.
Barit, thank you very much for your time and the interview, and hopefully we see your documentary and you here in Australia.
Thank you very much. Thank you.